Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Big Time Adolescence, Bacurau, and The Hunt. Hi, David.
Hi, Jill. How are you doing this week?
Oh, just superior. How are you?
That is so excellent. Well, I'm doing okay, thank you. I am socially distanced, as I always am anyway. So I'm just rolling along. And as everybody knows by now, I suppose, an enormous number of movie theaters are closed. And I'm not sure if all of the movie theaters in the entire world are closed, or even all the movie theaters in the United States of America. But there's a lot of them closed, and certainly all the ones near me are closed. So that means, what do we do when we want to talk about movies? And one answer is that there is starting to be a certain amount of alternative kinds of releasing of these movies. They're going straight to streaming in one form or another. These are all kinds of experimental moves that are being taken, but a couple of the movies that I'm going to talk about today, Big Time Adolescence, was going to be in a theater near me until that movie closed, and now it is in fact available streaming on Hulu and perhaps elsewhere. Bacurau, which was going to be opening at another theater near me, that theater is now having sort of online releases. In other words, you can get some of that movie theater's openings by going onto the internet, and that is being done in conjunction with the movie's distributor. The movie is distributing this movie online through the websites, I guess, of various theaters that were going to play the movie. So that's another kind of experimental approach. Our third movie for today, The Hunt, was supposed to open a very long time ago and was delayed and delayed and delayed for reasons that I'll talk about, and now is finally open, but now all the movie theaters are closed, so it too is available online. So it's interesting what's going on. For example, NBC Universal has released some of its big movies like Emma and The Invisible Man online. So that's the thing that's going on at the moment in various different ways. What were going to be theatrical releases, or what perhaps were very briefly actually theatrical releases, are now being switched over to internet releases of different kinds. And we'll see how long all this lasts. But in the meantime, yeah, I've got some new movies to talk about, even without going to a movie theater in the recent past. So with all of that said, let's start with Big Time Adolescence, which, as I said, is streaming on Hulu. And this is the kind of movie that I sometimes instinctively avoid. It's sort of a teenage coming-of-age movie. And there have been so many jillions of those over the years, and not just from America, from many, many countries. It's a very, very overdone genre, I suppose. It's a good genre, but there have just been too many of them over the decades. But in this case, it turns out to be a surprisingly good movie. Not a major movie, not a great movie, but a surprisingly good movie. And I really did have a good time watching it. It was written and directed by one Jason Orley, who I think maybe really does have something of a future, and perhaps in movies not only related to this genre. Anyway, it is, as I said, a teenage coming-of-age movie, and we have a young character named Monroe, who is around his middle teens, and he has a best friend, or I shouldn't say a best friend, but a really good friend named Zeke, who is older than him. Zeke has been dating his sister, and he gets to know Zeke, and then Zeke and the sister break up, but Monroe manages to keep his relationship with Zeke going. So, and Zeke is a ne'er-do-well. Monroe is a kid in his mid-teens with some real promise for the future. He's a nice boy. He means well, and he, you know, he does okay in school and all of that stuff. In fact, he's looking to go to college pretty soon. Zeke is, however, a real wastrel who sits around and smokes dope and drinks beer and does all the things you're not supposed to do. And he's got a bunch of friends who are just as bad. So not surprisingly, Zeke's parents, his father, Reuben, tries to discourage this relationship, but doesn't get very far in that. And that's basically what the movie is about. Now, what makes this movie really stand out first of all, it's just directed, despite the subject not being all that subtle, it's directed with a certain subtlety, a certain nuance. It doesn't go over the top. It doesn't push things in your face. It doesn't hit you on the head with its various points, many of which are comic. It moves along at sort of a moderate pace, and it makes its points in sort of a moderate way. And that's refreshing, especially in this genre, which sometimes goes, you know, for over-the-top, gross-out humor kind of stuff. There's very little of that in the movie. And the other thing which I really thought was superior in this film is that the acting is just really good. Monroe is played by Griffin Gluck, not the kind of name that movie stars used to have, but that's his name, and he's really good. He does a very, very nice, nuanced portrayal of Monroe. Zeke is played by a guy named Pete Davidson, who is not conventionally handsome, but does a good job of getting across this character's personality. And I have to mention that Reuben, who is Monroe's father, is played by John Cryer. It wasn't that many decades ago that John Cryer was always playing the kid in the movies about coming of age. And now he's playing the dad, and he does a nice job. So I got to repeat, Big Time Adolescence is not a great movie, but it's so well acted and just so directed with a kind of good feeling to it. It has a nice ending that I just had a good time watching it, even though it comes from a genre which I find a bit overdone. Next film now is very, very different, Baccarat. And it kind of has certain things in common with our third movie today, The Hunt. Baccarat is a Brazilian-French production, but it's basically a Brazilian film. And it's a very strange movie. And that is the thing to emphasize here. And by the way, it's a really good movie, and it's been getting a lot of good press, and I found it quite impressive myself. So Baccarat is about a young woman who comes back to her village, which is called Baccarat. And one of the old people there has just died, and there's going to be a funeral. And we start to get pretty early on the sense that things are a little bit strange in this town, or maybe even in this part of Brazil, which is, by the way, way out in the middle of nowhere. A water tanker truck comes into town because the people need drinking water to be developed, to be delivered, because there's a pollution going on and the local dam has been walled off and nobody's allowed to use it. And when this huge tanker truck comes into town bearing water, it's shot full of holes. So what's going on here? Evidently some kind of conflict. Then we get into the village itself, and everybody is taking pills all the time, and everybody seems to be very obsessed with the town's history, although it's not exactly clear why. And then things get even weirder. People start to find out that Baccarat is no longer available on internet map services. When they pull down the map in the local schoolhouse, which is an old-fashioned map hung on the wall, there's Baccarat. But as soon as you get into starting looking for it on GPS or on Google Maps or something like that, all you see is sort of arid land with nothing built on it. The mobile phones, the cell phones stop working. So very strange are going on here. Baccarat seems to be cut off from the world outside. Then it turns out that there's some real violence going on. And the violence is being perpetrated by a bunch of foreigners who are in a nearby hunting lodge, and they have all kinds of destructive weaponry, and they appear to be there on some sort of a vacation or something, and they seem to want to kill every local they can find. And of course, the locals have to start fighting back. So what is going on here? Well, that is what you find out over the course of the movie. Other things are going on too, by the way. There's a drone which keeps flying overhead, which has been fashioned to look like a flying saucer, like out of some old 1950s science fiction movie. So again, one strange thing after another, ranging from drugs to drones to violence to crime to all this stuff. And by the way, I have to mention, and this has been commented on before I came along, the head of that local group of foreigners with all of their weaponry is played by Udo Kier. And whenever good old Udo Kier shows up in a movie, you know that something very nasty is going on. And sure enough, he is the head of that nasty group. So Baccarat is a movie that seems to be, and I say seems to be because it's not entirely clear, a sort of a parable about where we all could be heading in the near future, where people who are not in the middle of things, people who are not in the various global networks, and that goes for the people of Baccarat even before this crisis hits, are maybe so disadvantaged that when others start preying upon them for one reason or another, or perhaps for no reason at all, they're unable to fight back. They're unable to take care of themselves. They're just going to be at the mercy of these whoever it is that is preying on them. On the other hand, it could just be that this is mainly just an action movie, and an action movie with a whole lot of strange twists, because that is the kind of thing that this particular filmmaker likes to do. It's not really entirely clear whether this movie has a coherent agenda or whether it's just sort of a romp, a sort of an over-the-top science fiction fantasy of some kind with a whole lot of violence thrown in. It was directed by a couple of filmmakers, Juliano Dornelles and Kleber Mendoza Fio, and they certainly know what they're doing. It's a beautifully – they also wrote the film. It's a beautifully directed movie. It's a beautifully written movie, but it's very, very strange. But again, it's absorbing. It's gripping, and that has been a constant running through the reviews of this film so far. People are saying there's just something about it that pulls you in and holds you, and I have to say I really agree. Now, as regular listeners to our show will know, I like movies that make you feel like you've been transported into some other land, some place that is very, very much unlike our own. And unless you live in the middle of nowhere, Baccarat is completely like where most of us live. And even if you do live in the middle of nowhere, Baccarat in its crisis that's going on is very different from places like that too. But you know, even if that's not a favorite kind of movie of yours, the kind of movie that transports you to some strange and foreign place, Baccarat is just a really fascinating film. It's fun just figuring out what's going on, and I took about half the movie figuring out what was going on, and then I realized there's still a whole lot to figure out. So if you like that sort of movie, it's sort of partly a puzzle, partly an adventure, partly just a very strange kind of story, you know, go see Baccarat. You'll have a good time. And again, it is available. It is being released by Kino Lorber, which is a very good company, in virtual release, and it's going to be popping up in many, many places around the country. And finally, our third movie, The Hunt. The Hunt was directed by Craig Zobel and written by a couple of other people, and it was supposed to open a long time ago when all of a sudden it became hugely controversial, and here's why. The Hunt has a premise a little bit similar to that of Baccarat. There's a bunch of people at the beginning of the movie who turn out to have been taken captive. They've been kidnapped from different places around the United States. They've been drugged one way or another. They've been subdued. Gags have been stuffed in their mouths. They've been transported somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And as soon as they find themselves where they are and they manage to get out of the various things that they're tied up in, they discover that there are some people out there in the surroundings trying to kill them. And we very soon find out that this is a case similar to what I just described with Baccarat, although a lot more coherent. It's very much more clear what's going on here. These people have been brought for a hunt. Some very, very rich people, billionaires, have got this apparently as sort of a hobby. What they do is they kidnap a bunch of people, they transport them into the middle of nowhere, and they then hunt them down with all kinds of weapons. And even though the people themselves, the prey, are given weapons themselves, they're pretty helpless to use them. And they're just getting mowed down one after another. As they start to make attempts to escape from this situation, they find even more strange things going on. Oh, there's a gas station over there. We'll go over there and we'll ask where we are, and we'll try to find out how we might get away from this place. And it turns out that's all just a big front, and it's more of the evil people there. So that's what the movie is about. Now, The Hunt, again, was supposed to open up many, many, many months ago, but soon after it was scheduled for release, there were a couple of mass shootings in the world, and it was decided that maybe The Hunt was not the right movie to deliver at that particular time. So it was withheld from distribution. And then when it was just decided to put into distribution, movie theaters started closing all over the place. So now it is available online. Thing about The Hunt is that, and I have not yet mentioned this, it is very political. It's not clear, however, at all whether the political nature of it is a serious message by the filmmakers or whether it's just another attempt, like the story of the movie, to be outrageous. The people who are conducting The Hunt the billionaires are liberals. They're all people who believe that climate change is real, and they all believe that capital punishment is wrong and that gun rights are excessive and all of this. And the prey are what used to be called rednecks. The prey are ordinary people, the deplorables, the 99%. So this movie has a really strong political dimension, but the whole thing is just so silly and so nasty that it doesn't appear this political dimension really has anything serious about it at all. It's just another attempt to get certain members of the American movie-going audience riled up about something or other. And that seems to be the real agenda of The Hunt. It just seems to be an attempt to get movie audiences excited over something that really is not worth getting excited about at all. It has a reasonably good cast, most importantly Hilary Swank, who doesn't show up until late in the movie but has a very important role. But the whole thing I found politically harmless because it's so stupid. In every other way, just kind of dumb. You know, the frames are in focus, the action scenes have a certain amount of tension, it's all pretty well edited and all of that, and reasonably well acted by people like Amy Madigan and Hilary Swank. But really, this is a very, almost deliberately dumb movie, and I suggest not bothering with it, even though it's available in your very own living room on your very own streaming service. So that is my somewhat variegated story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Big Time Adolescence, Bacurau, and The Hunt.